Good evening again. Greetings in Christ's name. It's good to be with you. Really appreciate what we heard already tonight. Do you ever notice how we like to have things complicated so that they're harder? Because if they're actually that simple, then it means we would have to do them. When people want to not do something, they tend to make it really complicated. Is it really that simple? Trust Jesus and he'll carry you through in your situation. Or is your situation slightly different? It's an anomaly. It's an exception to the rule. That's the way it works for us, isn't it? We try to be different. But it's a fact. It's one of the most simple truths that we can get a hold of. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do is to trust Jesus, to really trust Jesus. And if we could, completely, it'll change our lives. My subject tonight is young men as an example of the believers, and the subject tomorrow night is young women, an example of the believers. And I struggle with that a little bit because I don't want to just leave the girls out tonight and then leave the boys out tomorrow night. So with your permission, what I'd like to do is combine the two both nights and talk a little bit to both of you. And I think there'll be something here for those in the back as well. Hope so. But you can really pray for me because I feel in need of your prayer. First of all, when we start talking about young men versus young women and what God has in store for your lives, it's important we understand that in some way, whether it depends who you are and how you look at life, but in some way you know you're preparing for something. You're preparing for life. What is life? What's it going to be? And it's this big nebulous idea somewhere off in the front. And it can look terrifying or it can look exciting. It's something maybe you feel unprepared for, or maybe you're working hard at preparing for. But there's one thing that I would like to impress on you, is that it is God who completes us. I beg of you not to make a goal in your life, a primary goal in your life, to see who it will be that you get married to. That's extremely important, that you find a good life partner, somebody who loves the Lord, somebody who follows God, somebody who is going to help you in your walk with God and help you in your mission, the mission that God is going to give you. But first of all, realize that God is the one who completes you. You are not a half a couple. You're not a half of an entity. You are a whole person. You are a whole entity. And let God have all of your life. Start there. Let God have your life. Another thing that I would like to think about is the fact that holiness is a harvest. Once again, we try to make things complicated when we want to get away out of them. And sometimes it's one of those things that we think, well, we're struggling with something and we don't understand why we keep on failing. Holiness is a harvest. We are reaping today the seeds that we have sown in the past. And we tend to think of this thing as, okay, when I'm 50, 60, 70, then I'll be reaping my actions. That's true. But it's also true that you're reaping the actions that you have done last week, this morning, a year ago. Right now, you are reaping the effects of your actions. You're always sowing and you're always harvesting. And holiness is a harvest. So I'd like to start out by looking in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 30, and you already know what I'm going to say. You already know the verse. It's verse 19, but I'd like to get a bit of background. This is Moses talking with the children of Israel, just as they are poised on the verge of conquering Canaan. And God is with them. And Moses is encouraging them, and like they say, the sky was their limit. And he was telling them all the things that God would be able to do with them and for them, and giving them advice. But I'd like to start reading in verse 11. And he's telling them about the blessing that will come if they follow God, the curse that is going to fall on them if they turn away from God. In verse 11. For this commandment which I command thee this day, it is not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. Once again, something simple. You can understand these concepts. It is not in heaven that thou shouldest say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea that thou shouldest say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it unto us, that we may hear it and do it. But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live and multiply. And the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But if thine heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shall be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, that ye shall not prolong your days upon the land whither thou passest over Jordan to go to possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Therefore, choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him. For he is thy life and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. What a beautiful promise. What a beautiful request. Choose life. Follow the Lord, and he'll make of you a mighty nation. He's going to conquer the people before you. Just follow the Lord, and you can choose life. So much potential. And young people, so much potential. Jeremiah. Some people think he was 17 when he was called. Some people may have been as old as 25, but probably not older. Isaiah, young man. David, Daniel, the three Hebrew children. So many people in the Bible that you look up to are held as examples, chose God in their youth. They lived up to their potential. Many of the leaders of the Anabaptist movement were in their 20s or early 30s. So much potential. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. There's another passage in the Bible that uses almost the same terminology. Jeremiah 21, 8 through 10. Same terminology, different context. And unto this people thou shalt say, thus saith the Lord, behold, I set before you the way of life and the way of death. Sounds pretty similar, doesn't it? What comes next? He that abideth in this city shall die by the sword, and by the famine, and by the pestilence. But he that goeth out and falleth to the Chaldeans that besiege you, he shall live, and his life shall be unto him for a prey. For I have set my face against this city for evil, and not for good, saith the Lord. It shall be given into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall burn it with fire. Choose life. But what a life. Hundreds of years after Moses spoke, all that potential, where was it? Wasted away. So many bad choices made. This people who had the potential to conquer the world for God, I think, what had they done? They'd fallen into idolatry. They'd fallen into sin. Bad choice after bad choice after bad choice. You always have a choice. You can always choose life no matter where you are. But when we begin to fall away from God, when we begin to make bad choices, every time you make a bad choice, it cuts off some options from you. And that's why it's so important in your youth to make the right choices. The people of Israel here could still choose life, but it was going to be the life of a captive, going to Babylon as a slave. That was the only way they could choose life. The other choice, the sky was no longer the limit. The horizon was no longer full of possibilities. Two choices, die or be a slave. That's all that was left. Such a degradation of choice. but it was a long, slow walk of hundreds of years. And in our lives, the same thing can happen. And the same thing does happen. People who choose the Lord, follow His leading, are willing to go where He calls them. They have choices, they have options. But as we begin to fall away from God and turn away from Him, choices begin to disappear. Years ago, before I was married, I was on my way to Romania and just going to visit. I lived there a couple of years, but I was just going back for a visit this time. And I did a lot of traveling those days, and I had this duffel bag that was a really strong duffel bag. I carried it with me wherever I went, and it was all beat up, and but it's just the perfect size. I could throw all my stuff in there and be gone from the house in 10 minutes and be gone for weeks. But I carried this thing with me wherever I went. And one of the things that was with me that time in this duffel bag was some jerky that a mother was sending along for her son over there. She asked if she could send some venison jerky along to Romania. I said, sure, go ahead. And so I got this jerky and put it in my duffel bag. When I got to Hungary and went to pick up my bags, my duffel bag didn't come through. And so there I was with my backpack, and that was it. And the duffel bag didn't show up for 3 days. Eventually, the airline called and said, we found your duffel bag, and you can come pick it up. So when I got my duffel bag, there was a problem. My socks were hanging out of two holes in the end. There were two holes just perfectly chewed into the end of my duffel bag, in and out, socks hanging out of both of them. Opened the zipper. There's a plastic bag where the jerky was. There's the container where the jerky was. But there's holes in both of those and no jerky. The rats in some warehouse somewhere had gotten into my duffel, chewed holes in it, stolen the jerky, and were gone. Sometimes we think that the road we take doesn't matter as long as we get to the destination. As long as the duffel eventually ends up where it belongs. As long as our lives eventually get to the right spot. It really doesn't matter the journey that it takes to get there. But the fact is that if we don't pay attention to the way, we may get lost. And the devil's rats are ready and they're waiting. They're waiting to chew the best years out of your lives. The most important things. Make decisions that will enrich your life rather than bringing regrets. The things we do also impact others besides ourselves. Michael didn't get his jerky. His mother had driven 80 miles to bring the jerky up to our place for nothing. I ended up with a bag that let my socks out. The rats were the only ones who benefited. That's the way it works. Jeremiah 29, verse 11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. Then shall ye call upon me, and ye shall go and pray unto me, and I will hearken unto you. And ye shall seek me and find me, when ye shall search for me with all your heart. God wants the best for your life. The things that He asks of you, He asks not just because He can. He doesn't say, I'm God, so therefore I'm going to make you do this just because I can. And you better listen to me because that's just the way it is. He does these things because He loves us and because He knows that if we do them from a willing heart, we will be better off, we'll be happier than we ever would have been otherwise. God wants the best for your life. Have a passion for God. Remember, it is He who completes you. Be sensitive to the needs around you. Be a peacemaker. None of us is remarkable apart from God. But with God, each of you is anything but average, anything but unremarkable. Talked about last night about God's investment in us. God has invested so much in His people. And too many times I see people spending their youth. They just spend the time waiting for the day when they'll get married, waiting for the day when they'll be leaving their parents, waiting for when they can finally have a well-paying job, and they're waiting for, and they simply spend their youth. Don't spend your youth. Invest it. You've got so much that you can do now that is going to add value to your life later on. I think it's really important that we gain different perspectives. We grow up with the perspective that we grow up with based on the environment in which we grow up in. And if you've always lived in Chula, Washington, you're going to have a view of the world from Chula, Washington. Books can help that. Talking with other people with other experiences can help that. I would highly encourage both boys and girls to get involved in some sort of mission effort. And I do mean more than 6 weeks, more than 3 weeks. I think it's important to get really, really homesick and be really, really sick and tired of what you're doing and have it, something that's difficult. I think there's something that happens when we go through an experience like that that opens our eyes. It opens our eyes to needs around us, to other people's experiences, and to the fact that the world is not all as we are here. There are needs around us. There are crucial needs around us, things that are invisible to us from where we sit here tonight, but they're important to God, and they're important to God's people. I'm convinced. If you seek to find happiness, fulfillment, and blessing for yourself as a goal, prepare for disillusionment. Prepare for depression. Prepare for emptiness. Your life may be busy, but it won't be meaningful. Relationships, money, travel, sports, academics, religion, things, good deeds, music, escapist books, the Bible seem dry. And eventually people that follow this route come to the conclusion that everybody else in church must be like themselves. Everybody's a hypocrite. And years pass, and the rats are eating the best part out of your life. You may or may not ever wake up to the fact that there is a better way. Ecclesiastes 2:17 says, "Therefore I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit." How many of you knew who Amy Carmichael was? Okay, so you know Amy Carmichael. She worked in India. I'd like to read something she wrote. "The tom-toms thumped straight on all night, and the darkness shuddered around me like a living, feeling thing. I could not go to sleep, so I lay awake and looked, and I saw, as it seemed, this, that I stood on a grassy sward, and at my feet a precipice broke sheer down into infinite space. I looked, but saw no bottom, only cloud shapes, black and furiously coiled, and at great shadows shrouded hollows and unfathomable depths. Back I drew, dizzy at the depth. Then I saw forms of people moving single file along the grass. They were making for the edge. There was a woman with the baby in her arms, and another little child holding on to her dress. She was on the very verge. Then I saw that she was blind. She lifted her foot for the next step. It trod air. She was over, and the children with her. Oh, the cry as they went over. Then I saw more streams of people flowing from all quarters. All were blind, stone blind, all made straight for the precipice edge. There were shrieks as they suddenly knew themselves falling in a tossing up of helpless arms, catching, clutching at empty air. But some went over quietly and fell without a sound. Then I wondered, with a wonder that was simply agony, why no one stopped them at the edge. I could not. I was glued to the ground, and I could only call. Though I strained and tried, only a whisper would come. Then I saw that along the edge there were sentries set at intervals. But the intervals were too great. There were wide, unguarded gaps between. And over these gaps, the people fell in their blindness, quite unwarned, and the green grass seemed blood red to me, and the gulf yawned like the mouth of hell. Then I saw, like a picture of peace, a little group of people under some trees with their backs turned toward the gulf. They were making daisy chains. Sometimes when a piercing shriek cut the quiet air and reached them, it disturbed them, and they thought it a rather vulgar noise. And if one of their number started up and wanted to go and do something to help, then all the others would pull that one down. Why should you get so excited about it? You must wait for a definite call to go. You haven't finished your daisy chain yet. It would be really selfish, they said, to leave us to finish this work alone. There was another group. It was made up of people whose great desire was to get more sentries out. But they found that very few wanted to go. And sometimes there were no sentries set for miles and miles of the edge. Once, a girl stood alone in her place, waving the people back. But her mother and her other relations called and reminded her that her furlough was due. She must not break the rules. And being tired and needing a change, she had to go and rest for a while. But no one was set to guard the gap. And over the people fell, like a waterfall of souls. Once a child caught at a tuft of grass that grew at the very brink of the gulf. It clung convulsively and it called, but nobody seemed to hear. Then the roots of the grass gave way, and with the cry the child went over, its two little hands still holding tight to the torn-off bunch of grass. And the girl, who longed to be back in her gap, thought she heard the little one cry, and she sprang up and wanted to go, at which they reproved her, reminding her that no one is necessary anywhere. The gap would be well taken care of, they knew. And then they sang a hymn. Then through the hymn came another sound, like the pain of a million broken hearts, wrung out in one full drop, one sob. And a horror of great darkness was upon me, for I knew what it was, the cry of blood. Then thundered a voice, the voice of the Lord. And he said, "What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." The tom-tom still beat heavily. The darkness still shuddered and shivered about me. What does it matter, after all? It has gone on for years. It will go on for years. Why make such a fuss about it? God forgive us. God arouse us. Shame us out of our callousness. Shame us out of our sin. Ezekiel talks about how God looked for a man to stand in the gap, and there wasn't anybody. Nobody was found. One thing it's important to remember is that every generation has its battles. Your fathers and your mothers, your grandparents fought great battles in their time, and they still are. But you have a battle that you will face that will be specific to your generation. Are you going to stand in the gap? Or is the gap going to be empty? Are you going to have regrets? There's a verse that has special meaning for me. It's Jeremiah 20, verse 9. Jeremiah says, Jeremiah had suffered terribly. He was called to be a prophet. He was not called to give an easy message. He was called to give a hard message, a message that brought him rejection, persecution, hatred, mockery, imprisonment. And finally he said, "It's just too much. Can't stand it. God, you have to let me go. Leave me alone." And in verse 9 of 20, he says, "Then I said, I will not make mention of him, nor speak any more in his name. But his word was in mine heart as a burning fire shut up in my bones. And I was weary with forbearing, and I could not stay." I couldn't stay. Regrets. Don't shut the fire up. I was in eighth grade 13 years old, 12 or 13. Young Christian, trying to do the best I knew how, but very aware of my youth. And my dad was selling hay. Put an ad in the paper. And an old farmer from an hour away called him up and said he'd like to buy some hay. And dad square baled his hay. And this old gentleman said he's going to need some help to load the hay up. And dad said, well, my son can help you. Just stop by the school. It's right in the way. And he'll just come out of school and come help you load this hay. And so he came up and stopped by the school, and I went out and helped him load up this gooseneck trailer load of hay. And I was there, and we were chatting. He was a nice older man. And it was out of the blue, completely out of the blue, we were chatting about this and that, when something happened to me that had never happened to me before. And that was that I felt like God was telling me that I need to talk to this man about his soul. And here I am, an eighth grader, supposed to talk to this white-haired man about his soul. And it can't, you know, where's the sense in this? It doesn't make sense, does it? Didn't make sense to me. And the rest of the time he was there, I struggled with this thing, pushing it back. And he left, and I hadn't talked to him. But conviction was on me. And what do you know? He calls Dad again and says he's coming for another load of hay. And so I prayed. I prayed about it. And I said, God, give me strength to talk to this man, as strange as it may be. Because, like I said, it's something I had never experienced before. I thought I was ready. He came, picked me up again. The words were on my tongue. I didn't know how to start. I didn't know where to start. I felt foolish starting. Half a dozen times, I almost started. I never told him a thing. I never said a word. He left. I never talked to him. I don't know his name, don't know who he is. And it's a regret that I have, because strange as it may seem, I'm convinced now, as I was then, that God wanted me to talk to that man. And I wish so badly I would have. When God talks to you, listen. He talks to you for a reason. You don't have to decide what the reason is. It doesn't have to make sense. Listen. Avoid the regret of saying no to God. Hopefully I've learned my lesson since then, but it still is there in the background. I wonder what happened to him. I wonder why God wanted me to talk to him. It's not going to be easy. If you look over at Isaiah 6, it's a beautiful passage here about a young man starting his life. Isaiah 6, verse 1. In the year that King Uzziah died, I also saw the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims. Each one had six wings. With twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet. With twain he did fly. And one cried unto another, and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Then said I, Woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then flew one of the seraphims unto me, having a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with the tongs from off the altar. And he laid it upon my mouth, and said, Lo, this hath touched thy lips, and thine iniquity is taken away, and thy sin purged. Also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Here am I, send me. Was Isaiah perfect? Did he have all his ducks in a row? No. He said, I'm a man of unclean lips, I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. He was made pure, he was made ready by the touch of that coal, the coal that burned his lips. When God touches us, it's going to hurt. It's not something you can take in your stride. It's not something that you're going to go on without noticing what happened. It's going to burn. And without that touch, we aren't equipped. But if we don't admit our own weaknesses, God can't use us. Our very weaknesses are the path to our strength. Because as we admit our weakness and call out to God to help me here, two things happen. One thing, he does help you. He gives you his strength. I've got four children, and the 8-year-old obviously runs a lot faster than the 2-year-old and a lot farther. But when we're on a hike, guess who gets carried? It's the 2-year-old. It's the weaker one. The one who can't walk as fast, can't walk as far. He gets carried. That's the way it is with us. If we try to go in our own strength, maybe comparatively stronger than the ones around you, but you're infinitely weaker than God. And those who call on God to help them in their weakness are the ones who get carried. They're the ones who get the strength. So, don't try to clean up your life and then bring your cleaned up life to God so that he can use you. Come to God as you are. Let him clean you up. Let him turn those strengths into weaknesses like he did for Paul. Seek God above all. To find God, to obey him, is to be a blessing to those around you. To obey him is to be a person who stands in the gap. To obey him is to want his perfect will, desperately. And there again, simple. Choose Jesus, just like we heard tonight. Choose Jesus. And yet who of us is willing to follow that to where that leads? We've got plans, right? We're going to settle down. We're going to find a job. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Are we willing to put Christ in his place? Are you willing to lose your equilibrium? Without God, we are nothing. It's important that we're aware of the world around us. It's important that we have good friends. It's important that you husband your mind. You are what you read. You are the composite of those whom you associate with. And there's no substitute for immersing yourself in the Word of God. It's the best thing you can do. So many ways. Immerse yourself in the Word of God. Read it. You know, when I was a younger person, I would read verses, and I'd try to read a few verses every night. There's something to be said for that, having a close study of a verse. But there's also something about simply working through a book in an evening and just taking an overview and seeing the context. So many ways that you can be blessed. And just the Bible itself talks about the washing of water by the Word. It's a cleansing thing, simply to immerse yourself in the water of the Word and just open your mind to what God has for you. Plan for eternity. Shun pride. Seek to be a servant. Seek to glorify God in all you do. Remember that buried talents rot. Let God use that potential. Not for your glory, not for your pride, but for His glory, for His kingdom. They're not your gifts in the first place. He gave them to you. Love the truth. Hate the evil. Remember Calvary. And remember the Great Commission. If we were to get one of these boys up here, or the girls in the front row, to contact us in 50 years, put in their calendar, 50 years from tonight, we're going to start making phone calls. Most of us over the age of about 25 would no longer be here. We'd be dead. Everybody who's here tonight is going to have some gray hair. The things that will have happened in our lives largely will have happened. There's going to be a huge difference in the lives of those sitting here tonight in 50 years. What goals did you pursue? What was important to us? Where were your priorities? So much potential. Remember the children of Israel. Choose life. And don't wait until the last minute when it's either choose life as a slave or choose death. There's so many options available to you if you seize them as they come along now. Holiness is a harvest. Plant those right seeds. Don't take your eyes off Jesus. Don't let the rats get into your luggage. May God bless each one of you.